He who saves one life saves the world entire. And the most important life to save is your own. After all, it's the place where you have the most power. So join shadow worker and trauma therapist Laura Giles each week on It's Not You, It's Me. We'll uncover what's in shadow and learn the things you need so you can heal yourself, grow yourself, know yourself, love yourself, be yourself, and share yourself. If you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, it's time to drop the self-sabotage and limiting beliefs. A healthy, abundant, connected life is an option. Choose it. Subscribe, and let's start manifesting it.
Three times this week, I had conversations about the divine feminine. So I wanted to make this the subject of this week's podcast because when it's being talked about by so many, it's on the minds of even more. It's like there is something in the air that's stirring that theme up. And this might sound like it's for ladies only, but guys, if you have daughters, sisters, girlfriends, or mothers, it's for you too. So stay tuned. Now, I have a lot of podcasts in the queue that are directly related to your questions. I thank you for them. Know that they're in the process of coming out. I haven't forgotten you and appreciate your comments and requests. So if you have one, the best way to reach me is through the podcast website at lauragiles804.com. There's a review button and a connect button right there at the top, and you can do just about everything there. To your comments, likes, and subscribes are important because it lets me know what you're resonating with so I can make more content that you're interested in. Your reviews and likes are great because it's a way to boost the ranking for the podcast to increase visibility. So I thank you in advance. So let's just cut to the chase and talk about what do I mean by divine feminine. So when I'm talking about the divine feminine, I'm talking about everything is sacred. And what makes it divine is that we are living in alignment with it as it is meant to be in a healthy way. And what I mean by that, so everything is healthy, normal, natural. But when it's healthy, it's giving to us, it's giving to others. We're also receiving from it. Now, sometimes there are ways that the energy shows up where it's not giving. And it's the energy's flowing in one way. So we might be receiving by taking too much, or we might be giving too much. And all of that is divine, healthy, and good, but it doesn't feel so good. So when I mean divine feminine, I really mean that things are flowing in a way that's good for all creatures. Okay? And I'm seeing a lot of antagonistic stuff about toxic masculinity, toxic patriarchy. And the questions and comments that I'm getting about the divine feminine are directly related. So you can't have toxic masculinity without toxic femininity. They both go hand in hand. It's like the front of the hand and the back of the hand. You can't have one without the other. And I think starting with women and femininity is the most effective way to go because the hand that rocks the cradle is the hand that rules the world. Now, I'm not leaving out fatherhood. Everybody, I think, knows how important fatherhood is. The fatherhood statistics are alarming, and we have a problem with that. You know, absentee fathers impact early sexuality, people being imprisoned, mental health issues, how well we function in school and later in jobs, how well we function with other people. So fatherhood is part of this for sure. And when we have healthy parents that function as a healthy unit, we have healthier children, we have better connection with who we are as people, and our masculinity and femininity can show up in healthy ways. I'm focusing on the women, the mother, because when we are incubating inside, we're not separate from our mothers. So our first touch with the world comes through our mother. Her blood is our blood. Her heartbeat is our heartbeat. What she eats is our food too. Her thoughts and her programs are our thoughts and programs. There's no distinction between what is hers and what is ours. And we kind of think like, you know, we're separate people always, but it's not true. And I can tell you that for sure because of my experience as a past life regression therapist and the times that I have taken people back to the past and their impacting event happened in the womb, there is no difference between your mom's thoughts and your own. So mom is super, super important. And we want to get a handle on the misinformation, because I think a lot of the junk that's out here about toxic masculinity and femininity is intentionally stirred up to sell products, to make you feel inferior, to create division. It's political, and it gives people a way to be important, to have a platform, to have an audience, to keep you disempowered. When you know who you are and you're able to exercise your power in a healthy way that allows you to connect with other people and share your gifts, everybody flourishes. So I'm going to approach this from the idea of fairy tales, because most of us are already familiar with them. And one of the ways that this toxic femininity platform is being pushed is through fairy tales. And the dialogue is that you have these princesses and they're nobody without a man, and your whole goal into life is to get this man, a rich, handsome man, and then you put your feet up and you're his accessory. And your only worth is through him. That's one way of looking at these fairy tales. But that's not the only way. We're going to go deeper. Most of them start out with the maiden. And of course she's a maiden, because maiden is the symbol for innocence. And we all come into the world as innocents. And then typically what happens is she becomes orphan. And that too is part of Joseph Campbell's hero adventure. We come into the world as sacred children, and then we're orphaned in some way. Maybe not literally with the loss of our parents, but something happens and we're abandoned. We abandon ourselves. Somebody abandons us. We have this tragedy that happens, and that sets us up to begin to have a life of our own. Most of the fairy tales start out in that way. And the first one I want to talk about is Sleeping Beauty. So in the original Sleeping Beauty, this didn't happen. But in the Disney version, King and Queen are having a celebration for their baby. Sometimes it's her 15th or 16th birthday party. Sometimes it's when she was first born. And they invite the fairies. And sometimes it's 7 fairies. Sometimes it's 12 fairies. And they leave one out. And there are different reasons for that. In the one with the 7 fairies, they leave the 8th one out because they only have 7 place settings and they don't want to shortchange the 8th fairy. In the one where there's 12 fairies, they leave the 13th out because she's the wicked fairy and they don't want the wicked fairy to be there. But either way, there's a fairy that gets left out, and this fairy is the crone. In some of them, she is the bad one in other ones. So the crone finds out, oh, you're having this party? You want to leave me out? Okay, great. I got a gift for you. And then she comes and she curses the girl or the baby. And what this is about, there's 2 things that this is about. So one of them is about them disobeying the law of hospitality. You don't have a party for the fairies except for the one. Hospitality demands that you extend the invitation to everybody. Hospitality is such an important thing in ancient cultures that the gods will curse you for disrupting the law of hospitality. If you were a Game of Thrones follower, the Red Wedding was such a horrible atrocity because Walder Frey offered hospitality to the Starks and then killed them in his own household. And that just wasn't done. There's lots of stories in the Bible all over the place about the gods getting so angry about the laws of hospitality being violated. So you just do not do that. And I think it's still a good idea, because we all care for each other. And when you don't give that love and care to other people in the form of hospitality, then survival depends upon it. So the crone curses them for disobeying the law of hospitality. But also the reason why this is a crone is because of the yin and the yang. You have this baby, she's pure and innocent. The yang to that is the old person who has lived life. She's not innocent at all. She's very worldly. She knows what's going on. So these two become antagonistic because that's the way that we have balance. So if you're looking at it from a big picture point of view, then it's just what happens in life. Your innocence is going to be taken by something because that's the process of life. And it's not a negative way of looking at things. It's just life in this reality. We live in a complementary dualistic society, so you can't have light without dark, and you can't have innocence without its opposite. So these things come together to set off the Sleeping Beauty story. So we have the crone, super important. We don't have crones today. And when we do see an old woman, when we do see darkness, when we do see wisdom, especially in the feminine form, we demonize it and say that this is ugly, this is horrible, we don't want this. And this is one of the reasons why toxic femininity exists today, because it is normal and it is natural and there's no place for this. And when you're demonizing something, when you're pretending that it doesn't exist, then what happens is you have a whole group of women who don't have anywhere to go. Our society gives us one way to be, and that is to be the seductress. So what I'm looking at is maiden, seductress, mother, crone. When we come into the world, we're maidens, we're innocent, we're children, okay? And the way that a lot of girls are treated is that you are a seductress in training. It's like the JonBenet thing. You got your little primping and your hair and your makeup, and you're walking around shaking your booty, looking all cute like a grown person in a little person's body. And they don't get to be girls. And then you have the first round of seductress. Seductress is after your menstrual cycle starts. And you're in the space of trying to figure out who you are as a woman with reproductive capabilities. You're beginning to get breasts and you're beginning to get attention and you're beginning to become independent. So you're moving away from your parents' teachings and starting to figure out who you are. You're more reliant upon your friends and you're creating that separation. And all of that is normal and natural. A lot of parents think that my kids are an extension of me, and they're not. People want to have kids because they think that they're going to complete them in some way, and our kids are not our property. Our job is a thankless one because you have these kids, you put all your love and attention and money into these people, and they may not even like you. They may be somebody who's totally different from you, and that's normal. So people try to keep that from happening by controlling them, and it is the job of first seductress to make that separation and figure out who she is for herself and to be that person. And sex is part of it because she's a sexual human being. So that's the part that in modern society, we're allowed to be that person. We're allowed to be teenage girl with the school, you know, the school uniform things on, looking all innocent and yet sexy. That's where society wants us to be. That's the role that we're allowed to have. We could be pinups. We could be sexy. As long as we're all about the sex, then we're good. And then the other role that we're allowed to occupy is soccer mom. And I say soccer mom, not just mom. Because it's like if you are taking care of your kids, you're doing this for them, you're doing that for them, then you're okay. But if you have an identity outside of that, if you're a businesswoman, if you are a childless woman by choice, there's no real model for that. You can be a seductress or you can be soccer mom. So when the kids are older and they're now gone out of the home, and this could be 55, 60, you know, depends on when you had your kids, you still have a lot of life left over and no identity. What are you supposed to do then? So the crone, oh, let me back up. Second seductress is that empty nest phase. I'm not withered and dried up yet. Still got a lot of vitality, still got a lot of creativity. And because the kids are gone, now I'm discovering who I am as my own person again. So in the beginning, I'm my children's or my parents' child. And then I become the mother and wife. And then I become myself again. It's like, okay, who am I now? I may still be married, but I'm a different person because I'm not the mom. I'm not the hands-on mom anymore. And I still have all these juices and creativity and all of this stuff coming back. Not quite ready to be old. And once I do that, now I'm set up to be old. I've lived my life as a dependent. I've lived my life as a caretaker for my children and my husband, for my spouse. I've taken the time to be me, and now I can belong to the world. I can serve the world. As kids, we come in just fresh from the spirit world. Now I'm heading back that way. So it's a different way of serving. I have all this wisdom, assuming that I have lived. And when we ignore this crone, we don't develop these women into crones. There's no one to lead the way. Then, of course, it's a wasteland. Because who wants to be the sex symbol when you're 60? Maybe some people. Not a lot of people can carry that off. Unless you're Raquel Welch, not a lot of people can carry that off. So there has to be some place for us to be, somewhere normal and natural. And in Sleeping Beauty, that's the crone. So let's take us to Snow White. So after the maiden comes the first experience of the seductress. And in Snow White, we have two female archetypes. So Snow White has a stepmother who is very jealous. She thinks that she needs to be the most beautiful person around. And she looks into the mirror every day and she says, "Mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all?" And for a long time, the mirror says, "Oh, it's you. You hot thing, you got this." And then Snow White starts to blossom into a young girl with breasts. And she's starting to step into her own power and her own femininity. And the mirror recognizes this and she says, "Nope, not you anymore. It's Snow White." And so we have the two seductresses as antagonists. So Snow White is an innocent seductress. She doesn't even really know she's one yet. And then you have the stepmother, and she wants to kill her. And this is often what happens. If you look at toxic femininity in society, it's not the guys that we need to worry about. It's the other women. It's the women who want to bury you. They don't want to give you a chance to succeed. They're the ones that are clawing your face out. If you're in performing arts, you know what I mean, because they will steal your stuff. They will rip up your stuff. They will make it so that you can't have a good performance. Ice skating, I'm sure, is the same way, that kind of thing. So that's Snow White's stepmother. She's trying to kill her. And Rapunzel, it's very similar. So Rapunzel's mom, her parents want to have a baby really, really badly. They're trying. They're not having very much success. They finally get pregnant. And mom is craving Rapunzel, which is a plant, like a vegetable, green leafy vegetable. And so dad jumps over to the witch's fence, steals the Rapunzel, and wife is so happy. "Oh, honey, please go get me some more. She just can't get enough of this Rapunzel." So he does it again, and this time he's caught by the Wicked Witch. The Wicked Witch makes a bargain. She says, "I will let you get away with it, but I need that baby when it's born." Dad, being so in love with his wife, says, "Okay, we'll do that," which is kind of a crazy agreement. But what choice does he have? So, so they give the witch the Rapunzel, have the baby. Baby goes with the Wicked Witch. She grows up to be about 12. She blossoms into her maidenhood or her first seductresshood. And what does the witch do? She locks her in a tower. This is what we do to girls. It's like saying, "You are not allowed to be a sexual being. I'm going to slut shame you. I'm going to hide you away. I'm going to put you where people can't see you so that you're not a threat to me." This can happen through religious patriarchy. Be like, "No, you have to walk around with a sack on. You can't be pretty. You can't do things." This happens in the workplace. It happens everywhere. So she puts her in this tower where she has to be hidden away. And I'm bringing this up so that if you have an issue with seductress energy, that he's like, "Oh my God, I'm doing this to people. I'm doing this to myself," so that you don't have to live in it anymore. So that once you see it, you're just like, "We don't need to do this." So that's seductress. Let's look at mother. In Hansel and Gretel, we have two mothers. Their mother, so in the beginning of the story of Hansel and Gretel, it was their mother and father who took them to the woods. Mom was really pushing the father, "You know, we can't do this. We're so poor. They have to go." And then the idea of your mother doing this, because the mother archetype is all caring, all loving, self-serving, just very, I'm going to sacrifice everything for you. And that was just too horrible. So they made her into a stepmother. And dad kind of is browbeaten into it. And they abandon their kids into the woods. And then the kids find a beautiful gingerbread house. Candy, sweets on top of it. And they go start eating the house. And then the witch comes out. And the witch makes Gretel into a slave. And she puts Hansel in a cage where she fattens him up. What's going on here is that the witch is another facet of the toxic mother. We call this one sometimes the devouring mother. So this is the helicopter mom who does everything for you. You're so sweet. You're so wonderful. I'm just going to sweet, 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 sugar you up, do everything for you, take care of you so you don't have to do a single thing. And what I'm really doing is killing you. I'm killing your spirit. I'm killing your motivation. I'm making you dependent upon me. I'm just devouring you. I'm making you not a man. I'm not allowing you to grow up as a man. This is really important because I think a lot of times what happens is we see the toxic ways that we grew up and we're just like, okay, I don't want to do that. So let me go the opposite direction. And then we go overboard in the other direction and it's still toxic and it's not working. It's just another form of toxic to this pendulum thing. I talk about the pendulum a lot. And really what this is about, finding that sweet spot to put the divine feminine, is being in the middle where I'm neither too much nor not enough. So the mother in Hansel and Gretel, who's like, get these kids out of here, we can't feed them, she's not mothering enough. She's not caring. She's not nurturing enough. And the witch in the woods is way too much. Neither one of them's good for the kids. And then we have Cinderella. Cinderella is just so juicy and so full of symbolism and all kinds of things that I think we could learn from. It's not about this poor girl who gets rescued by the prince. Oh, that's all we're good for. No, she actually has an adventure. Okay, so first, her name, Cinderella. And I think on the superficial level, it looks like she's called Cinderella because she sweeps the ashes and the cinders and she's dirty, which makes sense, right? But if you know your mythology, if you know your symbolism, the ashes are a form of transformation. This is why the Christians do the Ash Wednesday. Ashes are a symbol of birth and rebirth, transformation. Okay. And a lot of male rites of passage, ashes are a part of it. They cover themselves in ashes. It's the way of saying like the boy has died and the man is being reborn. So Cinderella being covered with ashes is a foreshadowing that she's about to go through a transformation. And she's also a girl of the age of the first seductress. So she's not a child anymore. She's ready to blossom into herself. When her stepmother comes along and begins to treat her horribly because her own father does love her, but her mother has died. Now, stepmother gets kind of a bad rap here, kind of, because what this is saying is that we prefer our own kind. And that's a fact of nature. If you go out and look at the trees, you will see that an oak tree sends out chemicals, I guess, through the mycelia, through the soil, and they feed their own offspring, and preferential to just feeding everybody. We prefer our own kind, our own DNA. And we can say that's awful when it comes to parents, because nobody wants to have a step-parent who takes really good care of their kids and they don't take care of our kids. That would be awful for our kids, right? And we want to say that a mom, whether it's a stepmom or a blood mom, loves everybody. But the fact of nature is that that's not really true. So in this being part of the story, the whole point of fairy tales was to teach. And it's displaying nature the way that it is. So if somebody's reading this and saying, okay, I have a stepmother, they're not treating me very well. It's like, okay, this is how it is. What are we going to do about it? So what does Cinderella do? In the original Cinderella, what happened was she called to her ancestors. She called for help. So what do we do in this situation? We ask for help. We don't have a lot of power. And she called to the trees. She called to her birth mother. In the modern one, it's her fairy godmother, but I think she calls to her birth mother. So she asked the ancestors for help. She asked nature for help, which is always available. And they do help her. They help her to get out of there and to go to the ball, where she finds her complement in the male. So this is about the union of the male and female. It's not about toxic patriarchy, where all we are accessories to males. It's about becoming whole by finding the male and female in yourself. Everybody has male and female energy. So it's about becoming whole. And that's how we live happily ever after, is by completing ourselves. And the other lesson in Cinderella is that despite all the horrible hardships that her stepmother made her go through, she kept it nonviolent and peaceful. And she was authentic to herself. So she didn't become angry. She didn't become vengeful. She didn't become like, you know, because once she got the prince, she could have been like, well, you know, sucks to be you. Let's do some ugly to you. She didn't do that. And that's what I mean, that these are teaching stories. They'll tell you how to do this, but you got to, one, zoom out, see the big picture. Two, not be in your shadow about it. Because if you're in your shadow about it and you're looking at this through your own pain, you're going to see that it's about female domination. And it's bigger than that. So toxic femininity can be healed just by you knowing the greatness of who you are, teaching yourself these things, teaching these things to your daughters. When people see you, shine the knowledge of this back in your eyes so that it's reflected to them. So even if they don't know this, treat your women like princesses. Treat them like the people that they are. Honor the mother. Everything comes through the mother. If you don't honor the mother, you're not honoring life. Honor the crone. That is wisdom. That is the doorway to death. And we all have to go through that doorway. And if you don't honor that wisdom, you won't have a guide. So each one of these, maiden, seductress, mother, seductress, crone, has a very important part to the life cycle. And it's not just to women, it's to men too. Because it's the yin and the yang. We can't be healthy unless you're healthy. You can't be healthy unless we're healthy. So we need to be in this together. As we treat each other like objects and like the only thing that matters is beauty and sex, it just pollutes everything. So if this path to knowing yourself and being your highest and best self interests you as a woman, I have a private community called the Virtual Red Tent. I'm having a relaunch right now where you can get in on the ground floor, which is going to be really important because the people who get there first have the most impact in shaping what the community becomes because it's brand new. So from now until April 15th, the price is a low $49 for a year's membership. And you get access to a community of natural born women where we talk about our experiences as women to help us on our walk to cronehood so that we're living authentic, healthy archetypes, not the toxic form of femininity and accepting patriarchy. We're seeing the truth in these stories and life itself, you know, nature, and seeing through the propaganda that's meant to keep us down. We have monthly moon circles where we explore our inner world and share that experience too. And if you look at it that way, it's just $4 per moon circle, which is an incredible bargain. And if you miss out on the special because you're tuning in after April 15th, the price goes up to $99 for the year. But even at $8 a moon circle, that's still an incredible deal. So I'd love to hear your stories of power and tragedy so that we can all grow into more authentic, powerful versions of ourselves and lead the next generation to a healthier way of being. The link is down below. Thanks for being here, guys. Thank you for trusting me with your questions. I love having these conversations for you, with you, and living a natural, really life. So, ciao, guys. Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help the podcast thrive, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. To catch all the latest from Laura Giles, you can follow her on all her socials at Laura Giles 804. See you next time.